Before we look at James 4, I just want to ask you, have you ever, can you point to something and say, well, there we go, that was something that someone had big plans about and it never came to be? Are there things you can point to that are that way? I can remember when I was in Toccoa, Georgia, at Toccoa Falls, every day when I drove back and forth to work, I worked at the bank in Toccoa, I passed a very large structure of cement. And what it was somebody was going to build townhouse apartments. And, you know, they had cement firewalls between each one. So they had laid their foundation, they had poured the floor, and they had, I don't know how they did it, but whether these were prefabricated or what, but there were cement partitions between all the walls. Do you remember those, Laurel? At first I thought it was a car wash, but it was way too tall for that. You could never get cars in and out of there. All those partitions there, and then they were done. That's all they did. And what was growing up there was kudzu. Who knows what kudzu is? Yeah, Alberta knows what kudzu, and Mary Ellen knows what kudzu is, yeah. It's just a creepy, ugly, nasty vine that grows over everything that you don't keep it off of in Georgia. Kudzu is, and there's a million stories of how it came to Georgia, but it's all over. It looks like maybe grapevines at first. You think, oh, that's kind of pretty, but then you realize it just takes over the planet. And kudzu had taken over the cement structure. And I can remember one of the professors at Toccoa saying, that is a great illustration of poor planning, because somebody didn't count the cost before he went to war, or somebody didn't count the cost before he built a tower. It's a great illustration of that. And I wonder about that. I wonder if that's what was going on there. Or maybe I wonder sometimes, when I read through James, I kind of wonder, maybe somebody just decided to do something and didn't realize that they're not in charge, God is. And they got a little ways down a road that God didn't intend for them to be on. But we can do that sometimes. We can kind of arrogantly plan tomorrow without any consideration for what God has in mind. And when we do that, that's a bad thing. James is talking about that in our passage tonight. We're going to look at James chapter 4. We're just going to look at four verses tonight. And we're going to start at verse 13. He says, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and you brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, sins. Now, I told you when we began our summer of James that James was incredibly applicable and very relevant. And as I think about this, I think this is so, so very relevant to our times. Because we are really a society. We have become, in my lifetime, a society of planners. I notice that everybody wants to be in charge of something, and nobody wants to go and do the other stuff behind, you know? Do the grunt work, so to speak. Because we've really trained everyone to be an administrator, so to speak. In the school systems, that's a big, big thing. Trained leaders. And do you remember a song that was popular back in the early 70s? Too Many Chiefs and Not Enough Indians. Do you remember that song? Jack Bogut used to play it, Russ, in the mornings on Bogut in the Morning on KDKA. Yeah. We're kind of that. We really love to make plans. Think about it. Vacation planners. There are people who will sit down and plan your vacation for you because they're really good at planning. Or party planners. You can get someone to, I want to throw a party for so-and-so, but I need someone to plan that for me. Retirement planners. We are planners to the nth degree. But more than that, and James isn't saying it's wrong to plan for retirement. In fact, the scripture teaches us that is a wise thing to do. So more than just planners, what I notice about our society is that in many regards, we're control freaks. We really want to try to control what's going on, and that's why we want to plan it. We want to control our environment. I mean, who in the world would still drive a car without an air conditioner? Who has a car without an air conditioner? Put your hand up. Okay, Clyde does. Wyatt does, because he lived in Idaho. John, you have a car without an air conditioner? You're a real man, Pastor Friedland. I appreciate that. I would never have a car without an air conditioner because I need to control the temperature, right? because I'm a control freak. We all are. I mean, 20 years ago, it was the exception. I can remember when I was a little boy riding in the car in Pittsburgh and my sister's husband saying, "Oh, look, that car has an air conditioner. Their windows are up," you know? And we want to control our environment. Okay, more than that, think about this. We want to control our families, our children, even our parents. I today would never want to be a school administrator. I think that has to be one of the worst jobs going. And the reason I say that is because parents today are completely different than they were 20 or 30 years ago. Because they want to control everything that goes on in their families. There was a couple who had children, and they had them first in this Christian school over here, and they just weren't doing things they wanted to, so they had them in this one over there, and then they had them in this public school over here, and they were thinking of moving to another community because none of these schools were doing what they needed their children needed. And they ended up homeschooling their children. Being a control freak is a really bad reason to be a homeschooler. Really bad reason. But it is part of our society to really want to control things. Sometimes we try to control our peers. I think teen girls are that way a lot, but I think teen boys are too. It just shows up with girls. You know, well, if you're her friend, then you can't be friends with us. That's all there is to it, you know? Control. But worst of all, and what James is talking about is, a lot of times we want to control the future. We feel like we need to be in charge of the future. And have you ever considered what an act of arrogance it is to insist that you are in control of all these things? We're really arrogantly believing we know what should happen in the future more than anybody else knows. So we want to be in control of those things. Now, if it's arrogant to control others, then think how arrogant it is to control tomorrow. And that's kind of what James is talking about here. What I want to do, before we really get into this passage, I want to ask you to free yourself. If you have that arrogance of presumption, and that's what I'm going to call it, an arrogance of presuming you know what's best for the future and you want it to happen, if you have that arrogance, I want you to free yourself from that. Because presumption is always a bad thing, and you know that arrogance is. I don't like it when people presume upon me. When they presume, well, you're the pastor, so you'll do that, right? You know, or you're Steve, you're the youngest in the family, so Steve, you'll take care of that, right? Or I love giving. I am. That is one of my love languages, to give to people. But when people start expecting me to give, that presumption bothers me. Well, that arrogance of presumption concerning the future is something that is offensive to God. And that's why James says, now listen, look at verse 13 again. We're going to look at this half a dozen times tonight. Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to this city and or that city and spend a year here. He's talking about the presumption of controlling the future. It's arrogant, but it happens all the time. Happens on big things like apartment buildings in Toccoa, Georgia. Happens on simple things like having lunch with a friend tomorrow. It happens to everyone. This past week we dropped Tim off at Taylor University. And that was a great experience. Thank you for praying for us. I've been telling you for months and months and months, I'm going to blubber all the way back from Taylor. I don't think I cried once. It was just such a good experience. While we were there, we're in the chapel, and the president of Taylor University is speaking. And he's kind of doing some vision casting. Do you know what that is? Vision casting is saying, one of the things we need to do is we need a chapel, because look at this chapel, how full it is. We couldn't have everyone here tonight. We need a chapel that'll seat 2,900 people, and we're going to build one, and we're going to do this, and we will do that, and we will do the other thing, and we will do this, and he stopped, and he said, or as my mother taught me to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will do these things. Now, what was he doing? What he was doing was guarding himself against the arrogance of presumption. See, it can happen to you if you're a little kid or a pastor or a husband or a university president. You can still have that arrogance of presumption in your life. And the big problem is that it's offensive to God. That's what James says in verse 16. He says, all such boasting is evil. It's a bad thing. And God doesn't like that. Evil. In the next verse, he says it's sin. But maybe more personally than that, that arrogance of presumption is trying to you in your life. It can be exhausting to you to be that control freak who's trying to mandate the future. Over and over again, I see people stressing about things they can't control. You know, you ought not stress about the potential for civil war in Iraq. Is there going to be civil war in Iraq? Is there now? You know, frankly, I can't control it. I hope not. I pray not. But other than that, it's outside of my control. So I don't worry about it. How about nukes in North Korea or Iraq? Iran. I can't do a thing about that. Looks like the UN can't do anything about it either. So you know what? I'm not going to stress about it. How about the decisions that your boss or your teacher or your landlord or your doctor or your healthcare plan or those kind of things? How about those decisions that they make? Can you control those? Not very much. So should I stress about them? Boy, I really shouldn't. I really need to somehow or other learn to leave those things, drop the presumption that I must control them and leave those things in God's hands. And when I do, I free myself from an arrogance before God. And I'm liberated from it. It is so healthy to let go of things that you cannot control and give them to God. So not only is it something that is offensive to God, it's something that's harmful to you. So I want you tonight to rid yourself of that arrogance of presumption. Now, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to, and James speaks about these things right in this passage. If you're going to do this, you're going to have to grasp a couple realities of life. And these realities of life are not the kind of things that it's pleasant to consider. These aren't the kind of things that, these two realities that James talks about, they would be downright depressing if God was not the center of your life. But whether they're pleasant or not, they're realities that unless you and I grasp them, we'll never rid ourselves of the arrogance of presumption. And the first reality is, and you have to embrace this, is that you actually live in complete ignorance concerning the future. Look at James. Look at what he says in verse 14. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. How do you know what will happen next year? You don't even know what will happen tomorrow. Now, that's true. The best scientific minds in the world don't know what will happen tomorrow. You don't believe that? Check the 5-day forecast. Okay? Right? Or check people who have sat down with calculators and computers and headed off to Vegas or Atlantic City and hitchhiked home. You know? Or check out people who invested in Enron or something like that. You see, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And you really have to grasp the reality that what you know about the future and the details thereof is just darkness. And when you do that, that can be frightening. That reality is unpleasant because you're like, well, how can I face tomorrow if I don't know anything about it? What you do know about is about God. Do you remember that old hymn? Many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. You see, unless you grasp that reality that tomorrow is something you're not going to control, you're not going to be able to rid yourself of this arrogance of presumption. Let it go. Tomorrow, I can't control it. And here's the second reality. It's even worse. It's in that same verse. And it's the reality that apart from God, your accomplishments mean nothing. What is your life, he says in the second part of verse 14. You're a mist that appears for a little while, then vanishes. I cannot think of a way that James could have phrased that would have been more insulting. Do you understand that? That outside of God, you are nothing. A mist that appears for a little while and vanishes. Coming back from Clearfield the other morning, and I'm driving along the Metroplex here, you know, that highway between here and Clearfield. And as I'm driving there, I come around in front of what used to be, what was that auto place there? Weisgarber's? I don't know what it's called now. You know what I'm talking about? And I looked just out over the river there, and you could see that mist. But up above it, you could see the sun, you know? And I knew that fog is going to be gone within a half an hour, you know? And that's the way we are. in the face of eternity, apart from God, we're just fleeting as that mist. Apart from God, I think it's difficult to find a reason to carry on. But in Him, there is reason. You see, if you want to rid yourself of the arrogance of presumption, James is saying two things. Number one, recognize you can't predict tomorrow. So leave it alone, leave it in God's hand. And number two, what you're doing that you might think is really significant, unless God is in it, is really useless and really futile. And so tonight, I want us to kind of try to choose the right perspective. And that perspective is what we've talked about to some degree tonight. That is first to realize that your life is in God's hand. Now listen, let me talk to you like a pastor for a second, okay? I know you. And I know some of you have things in your life and the future seems so uncertain. And I know that some of you have pain in your life and tomorrow is a big source of anxiety to you. I know that. If it is not, then you're not thinking. Because I know what's going on in your life. And to really stress about that and to demand that that future come into conformity with your will is an arrogance of presumption that James is talking about right here. And I want you to walk out of here tonight free of that presumption. And the first way that you do it is by talking to God. And I wrote this down to say to Him, God, as we wrap up our time tonight, I realize that everything I have comes from You. I ask You to forgive me for arrogantly demanding that I be in control. I realize my days are not in my hands, but they're in Your hands. And I would ask You to forgive me for forgetting that You're the one who controls my destiny beyond my own means. I choose this perspective today. If you're going to do that, then you're really going to have to surrender your agenda to God's will. I was afraid when I said that I would say, surrender your agenda. You know, it sounds like a Long Island thing to say. If you're going to be rid of this presumption, this arrogance of presumption, you're going to have to surrender your own agenda, your own plans, to God's plans, to His will. That's what James is saying in verse 15, when he says, instead you ought to say, if it's God's will, we will live and do this and do that. I've been one of those Christians, and maybe you have too, or you've bumped into him, that doesn't really think too much about surrendering their agenda to God, but adds that little caption onto everything they say. Well, you know, if it's God's will, tomorrow we're going to have a picnic. You know, if it's God's will and the creek don't rise, we're going to go to Memphis next Saturday. You know, you understand? If the Lord wills and whatever. That's not what James is talking about. James doesn't want you to just add those words onto every plan that you make. He wants you to surrender your agenda to God's will for your life. And that's very hard for me to do. That's way hard for me to do. But it's something I must do. Because honestly, it is the only wise thing to do. If my agenda is not surrendered to God, that means I want to control it. And the fact of the matter is that no one knows best what should happen in my life tomorrow, except for God Himself. So it's the only wise thing to do. And second, it's just plain the right thing to do. It's just wrong not to do that. Okay, God, I know that I should cast my cares on You and not worry about tomorrow, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do the wrong thing. You know? It's just, well, James calls it sin. He says such boasting is wrong. You know the right thing to do and you don't do it? He says, that's sin. Right in this passage he says that. But maybe most practically to you and me, it's really the healthy thing to do. Because forcing your own agenda, I know this so well, forcing your own agenda makes you and everyone around you miserable. Do you understand that? It makes you and everyone around you miserable when you force your own agenda. So if you're struggling to let go of the arrogance of presumption, if you feel like for your kids or for your family or for your grandkids or for your job or for your wife or for your husband or for your mom or for your dad or for your neighborhood or for your health plan or whatever it is, if you feel like you know best, if those things are outside of your control, let's get rid of that arrogance of presumption. Let's just give that to God. Let's humble ourselves before Him. By the way, in the summer of James, we've skipped a few verses in James. You probably noticed that. Maybe you didn't. But one of the verses that we just skipped is verse 10 in this same chapter. We didn't talk too much about verse 10 2 weeks ago when we were together. But look at what he says in 4:10. He says, "Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up." You get what he's saying? If you place this sort of thing in God's hands, He will honor you and lift you up. So as we wrap up our time this evening, let's do that, okay? Are there things that are happening in my life that regard the future that I have arrogantly presumed that I know better than God about? I love the testimonies this morning. I went specifically to Mary Ellen and told her tonight how her testimony ministered to me and spoke to me. Do you remember what Mary Ellen said? She said, "I'm sick. I have a physical problem, and God has not delivered me from it. But in it, I see that maybe He has a higher purpose. I arrogantly presume that whatever bad is happening in my life or in the life of someone I love shouldn't be happening. And if God was a little more on the ball, He'd be taking care of it. And no, God is always on the ball." John Piper wrote a sermon that disturbed me. He wrote it years ago, but I read it recently. The title of it is "Don't Waste Your Cancer." I think, what kind of statement is that? And Piper's point is that God can use a terrible thing like cancer to accomplish a much greater good. And if you are resisting what He might be trying to accomplish by arrogantly presuming you know better, then you're wasting your cancer. Let me ask you, don't waste your heartache. Don't waste your pain. Don't waste your uncertainty about the future by arrogantly resisting what God might want to accomplish in you and in others. But instead, express your concern to Him. "God, this is what I want to happen, and it's hard if it doesn't, but I surrender myself to You. And what You have in mind, I am in accord with, and I want to cooperate with." I want to just take a couple minutes. Margaret's going to play, and then we'll wrap up in prayer. But I want you to talk to God, just like it was communion. I want you to talk to Him. Maybe it's neat that you don't have the bread or the cup, because there's no distraction here. And just in the quietness of your heart, Margaret will play for 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'll wrap up in prayer, okay? Father in heaven, sometimes I am very foolish. Sometimes I arrogantly presume that I know what's best and that I know what needs to happen in my life and in those around me. I forget that I don't even know what the weather will be like tomorrow. I forget that I am like a mist that is here now and will soon be gone, and You are completely different than that. That You have, are, and always will be. And that You know the beginning and the end. And that Your wisdom is more far-reaching and deeper than I could ever imagine. So I ask Your forgiveness for the arrogance that I have demonstrated, that we have demonstrated, in claiming to know what's best. And we surrender ourselves to Your will. hear our prayers, God, that you would heal, that you would correct situations, that you would bring justice, and that you would show mercy in other cases. Hear our hearts, but do not misunderstand our plea as any kind of arrogance that we know better than you what should happen. See the surrenderedness of our life as we think of you as our King and you as the one who is sovereign. We rest in that. If it is your will, God, we will do that which we believe you have laid on our heart. We trust you to make that happen according to your will, in your sovereign hand, by the power of your Spirit working in us. In Christ's name, amen.